All right. Hit me with your best shot.
Okay, I'll give you my best shot.
I have no answers.
I'm going to try to open things up here with a question that talks about unity, but also diversity. So what I'm interested in is my own experience is that one of the biggest breakthroughs that I and many people of my generation have experienced is, in fact, to encounter that word and that concept, diversity, and to have it put a smile on your face. Because there has been, in the tradition of, you know, Western European history, there's been an awful lot of battles fought to prevent diversity. And all of a sudden, we're in a golden age of diversity. And so as a person who represents the unity, how do you talk about that? Can you help reflect a little?
Yeah.
It's just a simple question. That's all.
Yeah. Well, I completely have a heart for what you're saying. And I think, you know, if we are going to survive, this sounds like one of those, you know, lofty statements, but really, if we are going to survive as a species, besides whatever the environmental issues that we have, that's got to be the biggest thing we have to work through, is inclusivity. We have to find a way to connect with other people and have a... Oh, okay. Louder. I think I just moved it off. I hugged too many people on the break. That's what it is. It's good. Not too many, just right. Okay, how's that? Better? Yeah, no, I think this idea of being open and embracing of our differences, it's not just, obviously it's a great psychology, it's a great philosophy for humanity, but it also is what nature already does, you know? I mean, you look at how diversity lives in harmony in nature, and, you know, if we're looking for some sort of a precedent for how we can thrive as a species, we don't have to look any further than nature. And there, that this idea of competition and exclusivity and superiority and all these notions that are all part of the ego are anti-life. They're the things that separate us from each other. And when we're separate from each other, there's a part of us where the light of God can't shine either. There's a line from A Course in Miracles that says, exempt no one from your love, or you'll be hiding a dark place where the Holy Spirit is not welcome. So, I mean, you know, it's just... and how you bring it about, how you encourage it. I am as open as the next person. You know, we don't have a very diverse spiritual community, even though unity is open and embracing of all faiths. We're not diverse racially, you know, culturally. So it is something that it needs a lot of intentionality, and it needs a lot of outreach. I think it needs, you know, sharing pulpits and, you know, getting into not the neighborhood we live in necessarily. And I mean, I don't have all those answers, and that's probably a bigger conversation. Was that the answer, that just the general philosophical answer?
It's fine.
Okay, we got it rolling anyway. I'm sure you guys will have good conversations around it.
Just a little diversity plug. It's World Day of Prayer, and at Unity at 7 tonight.
Yes.
Can you speak a little bit about what's going to be happening?
Yeah, good, Catherine. I didn't even ask Catherine to come up and do this, but way to go, Catherine. Way to go. Unity has the World Day of Prayer. It's every year. It started with the September 11th, 9/11. And so this is like, whatever, the 13th year, 14th year. We've been a prayer ministry for 150 years. This is a chance that we have to do interfaith. So tonight at 7 o'clock, we'll have a rabbi, an imam here from Santa Barbara here, someone representing the Buddhist faith, the Hindu faith, Native American, immunity. And so they will be talking about prayer, from their tradition, and then they will be leading us in a prayer from their tradition. So it'll be like six or seven different faiths, and it'll all be woven together by this beautiful man. His name is Emiliano Campobello. He is a flutist. He plays the flute. Beautiful. Native American and other kinds of flute, and that will sort of weave the whole evening together. And we have a soloist, Lynn Jacobs will be the soloist tonight. He's an amazing tenor voice, and so it's something you just don't even want to miss. 7 o'clock, across from Ellis Keck Park, Unity. So, yeah. Who else has a question? Who else has an answer? All bring your answers. Yes.
Again, speaking about diversity, one of the things I've been doing fairly recently is going to PFLAG meetings, which are parents and friends of lesbian and gay.
Yes.
And all the other things that fall behind that. And tonight, or next Monday night, they're going to have a panel of parents and people who are transgender, which is a whole nother thing. I think we've worked a lot through lesbian and gay and gay marriage and all of that. But I just think about how the experience that we bump up against that makes us either grow or not grow, because
yes.
I have a grandson who's gay, and that's been celebrated really well in our family. But more recently, he's decided he's a drag queen. And so I was like, oh. You know.
Another.
Exactly.
Raise the bar.
Take another step.
Yeah.
You know? But,
yeah.
But it did mean, okay, let's talk about that. I mean, I help him make costumes, but, you know, it took a little bit to get there. So,
Sounds like you're willing to take it on. And
well, I think that's the gift of what comes in front of us, and
yeah.
We can have the opportunity to, and that's kind of mystical, I think, of all that Richard Rohr says. It's it's both and to kind of look at the gifts around us and do they fit us for this time
yes.
in our life.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, you know, if we look at the teachings of Jesus. I mean, Jesus was one of the most inclusive people. Everyone who was ostracized, marginalized by society, bring them on. They belong at the table, you know. And he, you know, this idea of looking beyond appearances is, are there some appearances that we don't look beyond, you know? And that's what's being asked of us. Is there anything other than, you know, obviously the, you know, we wouldn't embrace something that would be harmful, but we don't necessarily have to be in a place of judgment. And because to be in a place of judgment is to really, again, a place where the light is not welcome, you know, in us. I think somewhere in the book it says that St. Francis said that eventually it will just be Christ meeting Christ. You know, in other words, the physical, the persona, you know, the external, the appearance will be secondary. And that we'll just see each other, the divine children of God that we are. And we can do that now, this notion of namaste, which is, I behold, you know, the Christ in me, or the divine in me sees the divine in you. We have that capacity, but it does take work, because we've been conditioned to think certain things are not acceptable, or maybe we think of them as being sinful or whatever, because it depends on our tradition. But you know, we can look at the masters, you know, Jesus it being one of them, obviously. And who is your neighbor, you know, for example? Yeah.
I just want to support your idea of the experiential. In June, I felt in the middle of the night, and I didn't have a push button to alert anyone. And my phone was at the other end of the room. And when I fell, I had this experience of my brain isn't always real focused, but suddenly my brain becoming very focused on the situation, and of a friend that I had been supporting her little DVD of her idea to help children keep that sense of confidence. And her little DVD was I Am Confident. And it had this rhythm to it, but I'm dyslexic, so I couldn't watch it and do the exercise. But I played it over and over, and it got into my psyche. So I'm falling. I'm in this real pain, and I have no way to contact. The phone's at the other end, about 6.5 feet. It's the middle of the night, 2:02, and suddenly that I Am Confident comes into my mind, and this energy that is separating the pain body from my other body, and then this I Am Confident, suddenly this energy is one, and I know exactly how to move in concert with this song. And it's I Am Confident, I Am Confident, and then bang, bang, bang. So I moved an inch at a time for 2 hours. And every time it was I Am Confident, I could move, and then was bang, 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 I breathed like I was giving childbirth. I'm good at that. I have a big family. And so it was the most incredible experience. My mind became clearer and clearer. And when I got to the phone, I realized, ooh, I have deadbolts on my door. I can't call 911 because they will break down the door. So I call my son and say, you know, I'm going to call the next door neighbor who's a contractor and get his ladder, have you pick up his ladder, and you come up on the deck and come in through the screen door, and then we'll call 911, and I'm obviously not emergency. It's 2 hours later. It's 4 o'clock now. So I don't want the fire and all the bells and the police and everything. Yeah. So I do that, and I say, Michael, don't get out of bed. Just tell me where that two-story ladder is. So he did. He told me. And so Paul came and my daughter Jessica, and so they crawled up the ladder and came in through the door. We called 911 and said, don't bring anything except the ambulance. And they said, no, we have to. It's the law. We have to have the fire truck. And I said, well, then don't bring the sirens. So we did that. And in this wonderful, wonderful experience of this unity of energy, and this woman quit a teaching job to start helping children by this DVD to not lose confidence that they have as small children. And the amazing thing is to me that I experienced that energy in my own body and my spirit, and also I experienced this huge confident consciousness that was bigger than anything, and this little figure in there that somehow I knew was me. And in my healing process, I discovered, while I'm recovering from this, it's a blessing of blessings, is that it was my own inner child that needed to be totally honored and loved, things I was doing for others that I need to do myself. So I feel like I am ready to go any old day.
Yay.
So
awesome.
Your experiential thing is right on. It is right on.
Very good. That's lovely. That's lovely. That's beautiful. And the synchronicity of helping that person with that DVD and not knowing that that would be a key lesson for you, even though it was aimed for children.
And the amazing thing is she's a young Jewish woman, and we connected immediately like we had both been raised in the same tradition.
Ah, yes. So, you know, God brings us together and brings
diversity.
Us in. Yes, yeah, diversity. Yeah, wisdom.
I've been coming for years, and I've never stepped up to the microphone. So twice
really?
In one day.
Wow.
And I just wanted to speak to this mysticism idea because I think that we, all of us have mystical experiences. And we think, they're going to think I'm weird if I talk about that. Somebody's going to think I'm crazy. That can't, you know, but yet we all have these experiences, but we have no format for that dialogue. And for true mysticism, that moves us in powerful ways. And I just want to share a brief example. My husband's sister was diagnosed with lung cancer, and she was young, and she didn't have children. And I went through the whole, you know, all the treatments with her and was her cheerleader and making them all happy and, you know, at chemo and doing my song and dance. And then she was clearly not going to beat this. And she was terrified of actually physically dying. So we said, we brought her home to our house, we took care of her, and she died at home with us. And she was just like, I don't know, Catherine, I'm not sure. And I said, you know, Shelley, her name was Shelley. I'm like, Shelley, remember Dorothy? Dorothy went, you know, to Wizard of Oz, and she met all the characters, and all she ever needed to say was, there's no place like home. That was it. You know, she went through this whole ordeal. So I would hold her hand in the last days of her life, and I'd say, Shelley, this dying thing does not have to be hard. Okay, trust me. And I'd hold her hand, and I'd say, just let's say it together. And she'd say, there's no place like home. So we'd just sit there, and I'd hold her hand. There's no place like home. There's no place like home. And not that I'm minimizing in any way what she went through, but, you know, lovingly, death is not an ending. I know that for sure. So anyway, she's dying, and I have my 8-year-old daughter, and I can't take her home because it's getting the very end. So I do the handoff with my husband after soccer practice, and I go to my aunt's in Montecito, and I say, you know, Shelley's really, really dying. I think this is the end. I have a friend who has a Buddha, a very priceless artifact Buddha that I think is Buddha Girl. So I call her. I find her in New York. I said, I need Buddha Girl. Shelly's not getting out of her body, and we need some big energy here. Can you bring me Buddha Girl? Which I would never ask. So anyway, I got my daughter. I go to my aunt's house. My friend's calling me. She's like, I'm in New York, but I'm having my assistant deliver Buddha Girl. She's on her way to your house now. And I'm, thank you. And I go into my aunt's house. I knock on the door, and my aunt goes, oh, I have a gift for you in the kitchen. So, you know, and I'm on the phone with my friend about her priceless Buddha Girl, and I go, and there's this package wrapped on my aunt's kitchen counter. And I open it up, and it's ruby red slippers. Swear to God, it's ruby red slippers. I'm not kidding. Not sparkly ones, but handcrafted, bath, homemade, like, exquisitely expensive, beautiful ruby red bath slippers. I'm talking to my friend, Buddha Girl. She's on her way. I get beeped in on my phone by my friend. She goes, Shelley just passed away. So, I mean, you can't make that stuff up. You know, and I think that we all have those mystical experiences where we know we are not just this body. We are not just this three-dimensional reality. So I would encourage us all to share with other people and open that dialogue about how the mystical experience is in our direct experience, because that really is where God is, where we are all this. There is no place like home. Your talk said it, and home is everywhere, and we are that home. So
yeah.
May all of you have ruby red slippers and great homecomings.
Yeah. Yes. Absolutely. Great. Thank you. That's great. That's a great story. Yeah. Good.
First, I want to thank you, Reverend Larry. I'm just really happy you came.
Thank you.
I knew you were very busy and you're going to travel north immediately.
Yes.
I wanted to speak to the... I know there's a variety of ways that mystical experiences occur and how people experience the divine.
But my husband mentioned to me after coming to Unity with me for quite a while that the way you speak about mysticism is very reminiscent of Meister Eckhart. And he was very unique in the sense that he saw us as a divine expression. Yes. The same eyes that I look at God with are the eyes that look back at me.
Yes.
And many others see it as seeking union, starting from separation. Am I wrong here? And where does St. Francis stand in?
Well, St. Francis was completely, the expression would be, the term would be non-dual, which means oneness with the divine.
So he was.
Yeah. And famous statement that's heard a lot in Hinduism, not so much in Christianity, but he said, what I am looking from is what I am looking for. And what you are looking from, just this, is what you're looking for, which is a complete invitation to look inward.
Yeah.
Because that which is looking is the true self, not just the human self, not just the physical eyes, but the consciousness, the awareness by which we take in all of phenomenal world. That awareness is the true place of union, where we and the divine are one. And so he was very much in the same, you know,
yeah,
consciousness and understanding as Meister Eckhart. Even though he was a Franciscan priest, and there was still the church being valuable.
Well, they called him a heretic for doing
but,
that.
But yeah, but he's
and
yeah,
they refused to make a saint out of him. That's why he became Meister. You know.
Yeah, right. Yes. Yeah.
Never mind that. Later on, he is a great mystic.
Yeah, yeah. Right. Yeah. And what's interesting about this is that it's wonderful to understand and to study St. Francis and all these saints and spiritual teachers and great mystics and so forth. But really, where the rubber meets the road for us is our own awareness of the Spirit. And that's why it's really just an invitation for us to ask, where is God,
yeah,
in me? Where is that? Because anything less than that is creates that feeling of separation,
yes,
right?
Yes.
And we could just say that all of our good is out there in the world and circumstances. When we understand that we have this presence within us, then wherever we go, we have the capacity to deal with life if we feel that connection. So it's worth cultivating and being aware, like Catherine said, being aware of all those experiences, yes, that bring us a heightened awareness of the beyond the mortal sense of being. And look for the synchronicities, and look for the awe and the wonder, and the evidences of grace and love, because all of those are qualities of the divine. And the more that we can see them as being not something that happens to somebody else or at a distance, but something that happens right here where we live and move and have our being, the more likely we are going to experience the divine 24/7. And I think that's what the spiritual life is all about, right?
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for that. That's great. Anyone else? Question, thoughts, comments?
Yeah, as we were just talking about this, I've been thinking, Richard Rohr, and probably a lot of people here get this, he has daily
meditation. Emails.
And what his lately about this experiencing is, it's almost like he's saying, come on folks, get out. He said, risk, go out someplace that is uncomfortable for you. Go to the prison, go to the hospital, go to someplace that is not familiar to you so that you experience something that challenges you.
Yes.
Because he keeps saying, I can tell all this to you, I can give you all the quotations of everything, but unless you experience it, you will never get it.
Yes,
so,
yes.
He says, go out and be uncomfortable.
That's beautiful. You know what got me to really realize how important it is for us to do our own work was the shooting at the AME church in South Carolina. And as tragic as that was, what was so amazing was the response of the congregation, of the, particularly the family members, who showed up to forgive this man within, you know, within a day. And I spoke to our congregation about it, and I said, I mean, I want to know where, you know, I want to know about that level of faith. You know, I want to know that connection to the divine, that connection to unconditional love, that enabled those people to do that, and for them to have the wisdom to see how they could only be free if they let go of the resentment. You know, I mean, so it was just an invitation for me to start a Wednesday night service and for us to do meditations on Wednesday nights. We've been doing that for the last couple of months, but it's you have to do this work. It's just not going to happen by osmosis, by sitting in a room and listening to somebody or reading something. There has to be the inward journey. There has to be a touching of what's real in this spirituality, of what's real and palpable and knowable, and where it's not just a head trip. It's a heart trip. It's a heart trip. It's a journey into the heart, and so it's difficult for many of us who say, well, I understand, then I'll accept. That's not faith. When you believe, when we risk, you know, crossing the chasm of doubt and hold an idea of unconditional love, when you think about those people, you know, what were they doing? What were they holding? What were they in touch with? And then find that in you, or find where you have to grow to that point and make that your intention. That's real spiritual practice. And you don't have to ever show up in a temple or a church or a mosque again if you're doing that in your private spiritual life. It's, you know, Jesus said, go into the closet and make this conscious connection with the divine. You know the presence. Know the presence. You know, the mind says, show me. And the heart says, know me. Know me. Yeah. So that's the work. It is doing the work. And I can give all these talks and sermons and tell everyone what to think and feel and believe, but if I'm not doing mine, it's just, you know, it's like a clanging cymbal, whatever St. Paul said. Mm-hmm. It's making a bunch of noise. So, but the fruits are when your heart gets changed, and then it's no longer faith, then it becomes a sense of knowing. And then life comes out from under you, a tragedy occurs, and you have this capacity to be with it in a way that you didn't have before. You know, forgiveness, grace, faith, spiritual understanding, allowance, all these things which come from knowing, not from believing.
This lady over here was speaking about going to an uncomfortable place.
Yes.
And my life has been forced into that, but it's also been a very growing experience. My husband has to be in a care facility now because he has Parkinson's and yes, dementia, and he's not able to walk anymore. So he has to be in a place that he's cared for. Well, when he was first there, it was just a horrible experience for me to see him there, to see the other people that were there. And I just kept saying, I don't know if I can do this. I don't know. But I said, all I can do is go and take my love to him. And so, step by step and day by day, it has grown into a beautiful experience. I used to say, they all have their own brand of crazy. And we all do. And we all come to that in our life. But I have been able to more accept them, accept my life, and do it in a loving way to not just him, but the other people that are there. And I just had to say, if I can't go there and be kind and happy and loving, then I shouldn't be going there. And it was like, I have to do this. And God has given me the strength.
Yes.
And the growth.
Yes. Yes. Beautiful. Beautiful. Thank you. Beautiful. That's it. That's it. Yeah. There's an expression, I don't know what tradition it comes from, but it's fortune, misfortune, hard to say. Hard to say. What are we here for, right? Are we here to get all everything that we want, all our preferences, or are we here to grow? Are we here to find the depth of our heart? And if it is, then the hardest situations can be the catalyst, you know, grist for the mill of our own growth. And that's beautiful. Thank you. See, that's ministry, when you're just sharing that right there. That's what ministry is about. Is when you're in the trenches with life, and then you have to find a deeper kind of faith. Yeah. Not just the garden variety, you know, that you carry in your book, you know, in your head.
Well, thank you for your great words, and some profound stuff has happened this hour. I really resonate with that. I thought that, you know, there were moments when there were no people for questions, so I thought of one, you know, to fill the time.
Yes.
So here I am. But it may tweak you or may not. It is something I heard from Matthew Fox. Mm-hmm. We had him here, but
yes.
He didn't say it here. I heard it at Casa de Maria, mm-hmm. at a retreat. Simply that his definition of a mystic is a panentheist. Panentheist. And further, he said, and a prophet is a mystic in action. And that, I thought, was pretty interesting. Could it be that we're prophets here?
Interesting, yeah.
Could it be?
A prophet is a mystic in action. Yeah. I guess I want to know more from that, because it seems like a prophet is often not someone who of action, but someone who's, you know, who speaks the word of truth, and but the word and life, you know, that's the mystic in action, is when you bring these teachings into your life, like Gene was sharing. That's action. That's action. Yeah, come on up.
This might be a nice way to end your wonderful presentation, but you're talking about doing the work, and that seems to me to bring into meditation and contemplation and things that we need to be doing by ourselves.
Yes.
So I'm taking a little survey. Do you meditate, and what method do you use? And tell us more.
Yes. Well, yeah, absolutely. And thank you for saying that, because that is part of. Many spiritual practices or traditions is meditation. And yes, I do, and it's grown and it's changed over time. I kept increasing the amount of time in meditation until I realized that the quantity of time was not necessarily paying any more dividends. It was just like I was like, I'm going to sit here for another 15 minutes, you know. So mostly it was, you know, it's about the ego trying to see how long it could sit, rather than there actually being fruits, you know, more flowers on the consciousness. And but I now sit for at least, you know, usually a half hour in the morning, but. But throughout the day, here's where my whole practice has changed. Throughout the day, I try to be mindful of just what I was talking about today. I try to be mindful that I walk with the Spirit. The presence of God is within me. You know, all these little words, you know. You know, when Jesus said, the Father and I are one, he was talking about an imminent reality of the divine. And you know, these things that I have done, so shall you do. And you are the light of the world. I am the light of the world. And whatever I can do to remind myself when I get just pulled out into the busyness of life, that I am connected with this divine presence, and that the love of God, the peace of God, the joy of God walks with me wherever I go, and with this person and with this situation. And that to me has been more fruitful than how well I sat in a dedicated time and space of meditation. But meditation, I think you need to get quiet so that you can really touch that part of us that when everything else sort of falls away, you realize you have a sense of being itself, which I categorize as pure awareness. We're not aware of anything, just the awareness itself. And that's when St. Francis said, what I am seeing from, what I am looking from, is what I'm looking for. And when we get quiet enough, we can notice what part of us is just pure awareness, the looking from part of us. And that tells us our true nature, and then we can bring that into our life. But it's a combination of, for me and for a lot of people, is spiritual practice in a dedicated time, and then what can you do throughout the day to remind yourself that this presence is with you? Does that make sense? You know, having, and if some people, you know, they have alarms go off, so they're going to just take a mindful moment and all that kind of stuff. That's fine. Something on your computer monitor or the mirror, you know, where you get ready in the morning, or, you know, on your, people have little scrolling things on their computer. Anything we can do to remind ourselves of the deeper truth and the presence, and that is something that is with us, and that what I'm looking for is really already resident within me. And that's one. That's oneness. That's unity. That's the yoga. That's the communion experience. And when we feel that, we have grand capacity. We have great capacity to be with life, and to be loving and peaceful and generous and inclusive and all those things. So. Well, thank you very much. It's been amazing, wonderful. Thank you. Namaste. The divine in me.